Good afternoon, and welcome to the fifth lecture of the Provost Forum of the Public University and the Social Group. Before I introduce our speaker for today, I would like to introduce Provost Hester, who's going to share with us and open up officially this event. Thank you.
I think it's on. Good afternoon. I want to join Luis in welcoming all of you to the fifth event in the series, the Provost Forums on the Public University and the Social Good. We're extremely pleased to have today as our distinguished speaker, Professor Carlos Enrique de Brito Cruz, who will discuss challenges and opportunities for public research universities in Brazil. Can everyone hear? Good. As those of you who have been attending the Provost Forums this academic year know, we've had many insightful presentations on the public university in our own country. Topics receiving special emphasis have ranged from budgetary challenges and revenue sources to public universities' public service mission to the so-called corporatization and privatization of higher education. We're by no means done thinking about any of these topics or many others that our presenters have addressed, but Professor Brito Cruz's presentation today broadens our perspective in a crucial way by focusing on public universities in his home country, Brazil. His distinguished career as an academic leader, including extensive experience overseeing the creation and funding of scientific research programs, uniquely qualify him to speak on this subject. I'm personally eager to learn from him his account of a situation that must seem very foreign to most of us here, a robust level of public support that translates to tuition-free undergraduate and graduate education. Because this series has an important purpose, I open each event by saying a few words about that purpose. I beg the indulgence of all of you who are already expert in this information. For the past several years, especially, the 10 UC campuses have faced extremely difficult choices as they attempt to cope with sharply diminished funding from the state of California. Inevitably, determining the right ways to respond to this more austere economic climate have proved an formidable task, as well as a source of passionate debate within the UC system and beyond. At the center of the debate is the question of what the University of California, or indeed any public university, should and can be in the 21st century. At UC Davis, the Office of the Chancellor and the Office of the Provost and Executive Vice Chancellor have committed to facilitating an inclusive and productive dialogue on the future of the public university. As part of this commitment, the two offices have established a web page residing on my website in support of lectures, panels, forums, and other campus events designed by or offered for the benefit of the UC Davis campus community. In addition, to complement other campus events, my office has established these Provost Forums on the Public University and the Social Good. This focused scholarly series is aimed at furthering awareness and dialogue on this important topic within and beyond the university community. It's also aimed at exploring the potential to make UC Davis a center for the study of the role of the public university in contemporary society. This academic year, the series features 7 public presentations by experts in a variety of fields, plus associated events. The presentations are overseen by my office in cooperation with the university's Center for Regional Change. To learn more about the Provost Forums, I invite you to consult the Future of the Public University page on my website. There you'll find a complete calendar of the 7 lectures scheduled for 2012-13, information and supplementary materials for each event, and videos of past events. You'll also find my opening remarks for the inaugural forum held in October of 2012, which addresses the task before us as we attempt properly to envision the public university in the 21st century. For making today's event possible, the following individuals and entities deserve thanks. First and foremost, Professor Brito Cruz, who has traveled from another continent to be with us today. Next, our Oversight Committee for arranging this and the other forums for 2012-13 academic year. The committee's members are Martin Kinney, David Campbell, Jonathan London, Luis Eduardo Granitza, and Program Manager Alyssa Thompson. the co-sponsors with my office of today's event, the Center for Collaborative Research for an Equitable California, the Center for Regional Change, and the Community and Regional Development Program. Professor Guarnizza, for serving as today's moderator, and finally, all of you for being here today. Your participation in the forums and your sharing the ideas presented in them with others is a key mechanism by which the series will help us identify and clarify issues facing public higher education and ultimately to develop effective solutions. As I step away, I'll remind all of you that you're invited to stay for the reception in this room immediately following today's presentation. And now I yield the podium to Professor Guarnizza.
Before I introduce our distinguished speaker, I would like to follow up with some of the comments that Provost Hester mentioned, and it's regarding the plans that we have for the future of this initiative. At this point, we are creating a committee to explore ideas of the possibility of creating a center, investigating research, doing research in this field, not only focusing on the experience and the situation of the public university in the United States, but also for a more global perspective. And so all of you who are interested in this topic are invited to join us in exploring these possibilities. The leader of this initiative has been Professor Martin Kenny, who is not here today. He sends his regards and regrets for not being able to be here. However, he's in Paris participating in a very interesting event, a conference, discussing one of the dimensions of that is of our interest for this discussion at this lecture series. He's the keynote speaker in this conference that is discussing what the Europeans call academic capitalism, one of the expressions of what the element that Provost Hester mentioned about policies that are being implemented and imposed on public universities that are restricting their financial support from the government and ended up in different alternatives of sources of revenue. For me, it's a great honor to introduce Professor Carlos Enrique de Brito Cruz. He's a professor of physics and is the scientific director of the Sao Paulo Research Foundation, FAPESP, which is one of the main foundations supporting research in Brazil. Perhaps it's the largest, I don't know to what extent. His professional record is tremendously impressive as a researcher, as a scientist, and presents a very interesting combination of his very impressive achievements as an academic leader, as an administrator. He graduated in electrical engineering from the Instituto Tecnológico de Aeronáutica and received a master's and a doctoral degree in physics, both from the Physics Institute, Gleb Watagin, at the State University of Campinas. He has done research at the Quantum Optics Laboratory at the University of Rome, and he also was appointed by a professor since 82 at the UNICAMP, and since then he has been working as a visiting researcher at AT&T Bell Laboratories in New Jersey in a couple of occasions. He was president of FAPESP, has been rector of the University of Campinas, among other positions. So please help me welcome Professor Brito Cruz for today's talk on the challenges and opportunities for public research universities in Brazil. Thank you.
Thank you, Luis, for very kind introduction, and thanks to Provost Hester for the invitation for me to participate in this very, very interesting series of discussions about the role and the challenges for the public universities. I thought of organizing my talk by starting by showing you some points about universities and development in Brazil, and then emphasize to you one of the important challenges for higher education in Brazil, which is related to the size of the system, to the number of people that have access to higher education. Then I will jump to showing you some information about research universities in Brazil, which are mostly public universities. This is one of the contrasting characteristics of Brazil's higher education system. I would say that more than 80 or 85 of the academic research done in Brazil is done in public universities. The private universities in Brazil, most of the time, are not related to research, with few very important exceptions. But the few exceptions would be counted in the fingers of one hand. I will discuss and show to you some of the challenges for our national higher education system, which relate to concentration in a small number of well-qualified institutions, the quality, and completion. And then I will jump to show you some of the characteristics of higher education and research in the state of São Paulo in Brazil. The thing is that Brazil is a country which is very heterogeneous. There are many differences. So whenever someone tells you, in Brazil, X happens, it never happens, right? X will be the average of something which is very big in some places, very small in other places. So you have to look at the details to really understand. So I'll show you one of those details, which is how the state of São Paulo deals with higher education and research, by showing you something about the São Paulo Research Foundation, and a little bit of a discussion about a tension which is very present in Brazil, and I'm sure it is present here too, which is this tension between fundamental and applied research and useful research and not useful research and whatever. And then, just to mention, since we have this open call for proposals for scientific collaboration between researchers in São Paulo and here at Davis, I will mention something about international collaboration, which is a strategy that our foundation and several universities in the state of São Paulo have been developing in recent years. So just to start, an important point for us in Brazil is that universities, especially the public universities, they are now determinant for the development of Brazil. Many people in Brazil, especially from older generations, they tend to repeat something they used to say in the 60s, which was that universities will be important for Brazil. But they are now. It's not that they will be important. Brazil developed an industry system. Brazil developed agriculture. Brazil developed a system for producing oil, for using ethanol for powering automobiles. Brazil developed aeronautics industry, all because there are some very good public research universities in Brazil that educated engineers, chemists, professionals who are making all this happen in all those fields. Of course, education is the core role of a university, even though many times by reading or listening to even university leaders, we tend to think that it's not, because they always talk about the inventions, the IP, the patents, and so on. But the real thing that a university, in our view, contributes to a society is education of a lot of students, right? And those students are going to change and improve that society. And of course, research, spin-offs, IP, and other things are important and relevant, but they do not substitute for educating well the students who are going to make society operate. And in Brazil, there's always a tension between those two things, because education is something which is not only taken for granted, usually from universities, but it's also less visible. because you do not announce that you have a new student as you announce that you found a new patent, right? But we should, because the student is going to probably invent many patents along his life. So the thing is that many times in the debate about the role of universities in Brazil, education tends to disappear from the table. It hides. And so we always need to bring it back to the discussion. Of course, research contributes to the level, to the quality of education. And also there are several impacts that universities have been having in Brazil in terms of development, if you talk about economic development, because that's another topic which is subtle in the debate about universities in Brazil, and I think in many other places from what I've seen. It is the many people tend to think that universities should create economic development. And I will not say they shouldn't, but I think that universities should create something bigger than economic development. They should create development of a society. Economic development is a part of that. But then there is intellectual development. There is creating knowledge and wisdom and so on. So it is something that is always present in our way of viewing the role of universities in Brazil in the present debate. As I mentioned to you, because of the inequalities that exist in Brazil, regional initiatives are very, very determinant for the development of higher education, science research, and economic, social, and intellectual development of the regions of Brazil. That's another point which is always a point of tension in Brazil, because there are richer states and poorer states. And most of the time, the poorer states tend to point their fingers at the richer states and say, well, you are taking all the money, all the investment and everything. And it's the people in the richer states say that they are not getting enough or whatever they deserve. So that's always and the thing is that the initiative of regions in Brazil is very different. So most of the states in Brazil wait for the federal government to create higher education and research development in their regions. And few states take the initiative to do things with their own money, with their own effort, and that brings more of the federal investment and federal effort and so on. So that's another one of the tensions that exist in our system. As I just said to you, there is education, there is knowledge creation through research, there is research and education-based community engagement. The fact that community engagement should be research and education-based is especially a hot topic in Brazil, because many times leaders and students in Brazilian universities tend to believe that universities should fix everything in Brazil. But they should fix the things that depend on research and education. Other things, there are other parts of the country which are responsible for dealing with those. So that those would be the three missions that we assume for public universities in Brazil. Just to give you some perspective on the numbers, you see this is a table with many numbers, but anyway, it's what I'm showing there is that between 2001 and 2011, there was a strong growth in the higher education system of Brazil. I could have chosen other dates like 1991 and 2011, and still we would have numbers or percentages which would be 150% or 200%. But that's just a time frame there. You will see that in the last line, the red line, the gross enrollment rate, that is the number of persons attending higher education divided by the number of persons in Brazil between ages 18 and 24, used to be 13%, and it almost doubled to 24%. It's very good that it's almost doubled. But still 24% of gross enrollment rate is very small for a country that wants to create development and to have enough professionals and educated persons to develop society. If we would consider the net enrollment rate, that is, persons of age 18 to 24 in universities divided by the population at those ages, we would get numbers presently which would be around 16% only. This is a very small number, and especially for a country that has the eighth economy or seventh economy in the world. So there are, that is to say that there are enormous challenges for higher education in Brazil. We have a lot of things to do, and we have a lot of things to understand and to agree among ourselves in Brazil to be able to solve the, to face the challenges that exist. If you look in the last columns, you will see that the total enrollment in higher education increased by 90% in those 10 years. In public universities, it went up by 70%, and in private universities by 98%. This is another of the challenges for Brazil, because as I mentioned to you, the private universities have very small involvement with research. And in addition to that, the private universities offer an education which is very, very limited. So that most of the strongest increase in higher education access in Brazil happened in institutions which offer education which is not really that good. And that is a permanent concern in Brazil, and became a more, even more important concern in recent years, because when the Brazilian economy, after the stabilization that happened during the 90s, faced conditions which were good enough for the economy to grow, the demand for engineers, for professionals, grew very fast. And Brazil didn't have enough people to operate everything, to fill those jobs. And that caused all kinds of problems, from raising salaries because of a small labor offer, to limiting investment because companies could not create investment because they wouldn't find enough people to do whatever they needed to. So this is those are the two challenges that I wanted to highlight in this picture, which gives you an idea of the whole system of Brazil of higher education. In terms of research universities, as I mentioned, most of them are public universities, and but still there we have big challenges to face. For example, in the system of public universities in Brazil, all around the country, only 54% of the faculty has a PhD degree. So it's difficult to organize a research university if you have only 54% of the faculty with a PhD degree. You have 54% of a research university, or whatever that would mean. However, there are differences. For example, in the public universities in the state of São Paulo, which are state universities and federal universities. In Brazil, there are three types of public universities. There are universities which are funded by the federal government, universities which are funded by the state government, and a small number of universities which are funded by municipal governments. Small number. So in the state of São Paulo, there are state universities and federal, as we call, universities, and there the qualification of the faculty is much higher. It's like 91, 95, depends on the university. You always have a number of professors who do not have a PhD and give a very important contribution to the university. But those universities in São Paulo, they get closer to what you would require or expect from a research university. On the other hand, in the private universities in Brazil, only 24% of the faculty has a PhD. And that shows a challenge, and it shows also an important opportunity, because it means that Brazil has to develop a system, which Brazil did in the last 50 or 60 years, a graduate system to graduate enough people to fill those positions. And so there's actually a good number of opportunities for young PhDs to start their careers in several organizations in Brazil, public and private. That is to show you one of the results of the graduate system that Brazil organized, especially since the beginning of the 60s, which is a figure that shows the number of doctorates awarded every year in Brazil. And you can see that there is a strong growth. Brazil is graduating now about 12,000 PhDs every year, which is a number, if you compare to the United States, I think it's going to be like 25% of the number of the United States, or 22%, something like that. It is a large number, but still it is a number which is below what the country needs in terms of filling those positions that I mentioned to you minutes ago. There is an interesting feature in this curve, which is it tended to rise very quickly and then it slowed down sometime around 2003. This is something that is being debated in Brazil, because it lends opportunity to all kinds of finger pointing between politicians. It was when your government started, no, you did that before, and so on. But anyway, it's an interesting change there. If you look at another result which relates to the development of a graduate system, it is the number of scientific articles published with authors from Brazilian institutions in Brazil, Brazilian research institutions, which are mostly universities. And you see that there was a very strong growth, a steep growth actually, changing from about 2,000 papers per year in the 80s of last century to around almost 45,000 articles per year. Those are articles in international journals, which means this shows to us that science in Brazil is becoming a more relevant part of science in the world. Brazilians are giving a stronger contribution to science in the world. As I show in this next figure, which shows that in the beginning of the 80s, Brazil contributed about 0.5% of the science created in the world, while presently we are at 2.7%, something like that, which is a percentage comparable to that of South Korea or Spain or other regions which have been developing scientific systems in the world. Actually, if you look at the growth in the number of articles published in international journals between 1995 and 2010, Brazil would be number three, together with South Korea and China. It's not good, bad company to be with there, right? Countries where science has been moving ahead. So there was a policy which was created and implemented by the Brazilian government, in most part by the national government, to a smaller extent, but important extent, by some state governments, for creating this system of research universities. It included, for example, in the 60s of last century, the creation of government agencies that would oversee not only the funding, but also the quality of graduate education. Brazil has one agency which belongs to the Ministry of Education. It's called CAPES. And one of the important missions of CAPES is to fund fellowships for graduate students. But probably the most important role of CAPES is because they organized a system for assessing the quality of each one of the graduate courses in Brazil. So every course, every 3 years, goes through a review. They invite experts from anywhere in the world. that visit the course and do interviews and look at their reports and so on. And on the basis of this qualification, that's how CAPES decides how much funding each one will receive. And whenever you do something that relates to how much funding they will receive, people respond to that, right? It's something very, very common. So the development of this graduate system made some very interesting, some positive and some negative changes in the Brazilian landscape for academic research. The positive side, of course, is that Brazil graduated a number of PhDs. For example, I am from a generation that of persons who obtained their PhD in Brazil. Then we went abroad as postdocs and researchers and so on and went back to Brazil. But before, the generation before mine, people had to go abroad to obtain a PhD. So that was a good thing, but then it brought a bad thing, because once people were able to obtain their PhDs in Brazil, the creation of international networks of collaboration decreased. And so the science and research activities in Brazil tended to become more introverted and more local, which is something that Brazil is working now to overcome by creating several types of international opportunities for a connection. So if I would summarize this part about higher education in Brazil, I would highlight to you that the three points that I want to bring out at this point are, first, there is a challenge related to the quality, but not especially, it's not really only the question of the quality of the higher education institutions. The medium level education in Brazil is very bad, which means universities receive students who are badly educated, which means universities either have to spend time re-educating those persons with high school content, or which is too expensive to do in a university, or you have a very high rate of people who give up. They won't follow their courses through. So this is one of the, probably the most important challenge for the development of higher education in Brazil, is fixing the high school system and the quality of the high school system and the access of persons to the high school system. It's still, to give you a number, in Brazil, on average, only 54% of the people of age, people with, say, 18 or 17 years old, have completed high school. That means not only that you have a small pool coming to the universities, but also means that Brazil is not using the pool of talent which exists in the country. So this is probably the most important challenge for developing higher education in Brazil. It's strange to say that the most important challenge for higher education is fixing preceding education, but that's how it is. It's many of the presidents and rectors of university, they're not very happy saying that, because it means the money will go somewhere else, right? But that's how things are. Then there is this challenge, as I mentioned to you minutes ago, about the qualification of faculty, having faculty which is better qualified so that you can develop universities into research universities. There is a second point which is very, very deleterious in the Brazilian higher education system, especially in the federal system, which is lack of autonomy. Universities need to have some degree of autonomy to thrive, right? Autonomy doesn't mean independence. It means autonomy. It means that you have to make your decisions on merit and selecting students and selecting professors and deciding on pay and so on. But the federal universities in Brazil have almost zero leeway for any of those functions. They cannot even, if a university fires a professor because the professor was not performing well, they cannot hire somebody next week. They have to ask the ministry for a position, and he might authorize or not. So it creates a system in which the feedbacks are against merit, right? They face all types of restriction related to the use of funds. For example, they cannot move funds from paying equipment and consumables to hiring people, or the other way around. It's also a big limitation for the universities. And the third point that I want to bring out here is heterogeneity and concentration. When you talk about research universities in Brazil, you end up talking about maybe 10 universities, not more than that. And Brazil has 27 states. So we would like to have at least 27 research universities, one in each state. So this is another of the difficulties which relates to concentration. As I was saying, concentration, you see, 11 universities in Brazil respond for 74% of all the scientific publications in Brazil at any given year. The University of São Paulo, which is the biggest one, the main university in Brazil, the oldest one, publishes 26% of the articles. University of Campinas, which is younger, was created in 1967, responds now for 9%. The Federal University of Rio de Janeiro, 7%. University of the State of São Paulo, 7%. And then several other universities. The one other thing that comes out from this figure is that you will see that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of those 11 universities are in the state of São Paulo in Brazil. And there is a reason for that. And I will go into that in the following slides. But this is an important challenge for the country to find the ways to create the opportunities for the other universities in Brazil to develop as well. The thing is that the country keeps struggling between a convenient situation in which the university presidents do not have to take any strong responsibility, because if you have to define the pay level of the faculty, that's something. It gives a lot of work to the president and to the committees and to the provost and to whoever does that. So they tend to sit there and complain but do nothing, because then they say, well, it's the problem of the federal government. The president doesn't want us to do that and this and that. So it's a situation which found a stability in a situation which is not really good for development. But it's convenient for many, many persons in the leadership. Now, talking about concentration, if you look at the evolution in the number of scientific articles published by Brazilian authors, that's the blue line there. And then if you look at authors from the state of São Paulo, that's the red line. If you divide the red line by the blue line, you get the green line, the scale on the right, which shows that the state of authors in the state of São Paulo respond for about half of the science which is created in Brazil, which relates, of course, with what I've shown to you in the other table, in which we had 5 out of the 11 universities which are in the state of São Paulo. And that's why I will spend a few minutes talking to you about the strategies that the state of São Paulo has been using to develop higher education and research. Just to bring you up to date on some relevant information, the state of São Paulo is one of the 27 Brazilian states, southeast of Brazil, population of 41 million people. That's a population the same size of Spain or Argentina. The state of São Paulo responds for about one-third of Brazil's GDP, which means the economy of São Paulo is larger than the economy of Argentina and is smaller a little bit than the economy of Spain. So it's a region where many things happen. Responds for about half of the science which is done in Brazil, and the state government in São Paulo expends about 13% of its yearly expenditures in higher education and research, which is in contrast to what happens in all the other 26 Brazilian states, where the expenditures by the state are much less. The total intensity of expenditures in research in São Paulo is around 1.6% of the GDP, adding industry and public, private and public expenditures. Just to give you a flavor of the size of the heterogeneity, this figure, data from by the Ministry of Science and Technology, shows the yearly the expenditures by each state of Brazil in research and development in the year 2010. You will see there the state of São Paulo in the bottom. The second state is Rio de Janeiro, which spends 10 times less than the state of São Paulo. And then there is Paraná and Minas Gerais, which are at 23 times less. This is something that is not really only, or I think it's not at all related to the wealth of the state, because many people look at this figure and say, well, São Paulo is the richer state, that's why they spend more. But it's not. The thing is that the difference between the GDP of São Paulo and the GDP of Rio de Janeiro is not 10 times. It's more likely 3 times. Or with Minas Gerais, again, it's 3 times. So it's a difference in priority of the state, in choices that the state, the governor, the state senate, the scientific community, the industrial community make around using the state expenditures for whatever they can use to. Higher education in the state of São Paulo includes 59 higher education technical faculties, which we call FATEC, which are schools which have shorter courses, 3 years. They would be like a community college. And in some ways, the plan that was organized for developing those high, those technical faculties in the state of São Paulo was a plan that we proposed, the committee of presidents of universities proposed it to the government of the state around 10 years ago, which learned, on doing that plan, we learned many things from the California master plan, right? So those are the three-year courses. Before that, 10 years ago, we had only 5 of those schools. Now we have 59. And we have 3 state-funded universities, which are University of São Paulo, University of Campinas, and University of the State of São Paulo. And those universities are funded through a very peculiar scheme. There is a governor's decree that from 1989 that states that those universities are entitled to 9.57% of whatever money the state makes. And that's that. So every year they do not negotiate a new budget with the governor. They know they are going to have 9.57, and within this value, they can do whatever they need to operate. They can hire, they can fire, they can buy, they can sell, they can buy land, sell land, do whatever. So this type of autonomy was very, very important for the University of the State in São Paulo and set them on a track which is completely a part of the federal universities in Brazil. Because it's not only because you have a fixed amount, it's a percentage. It is because you can make long-term plans on that. And also because this, the academic community understood after this, that was in 1989, that they have this amount of money and they have to do the best with that. And from then on, the universities, what happened at the universities? The number of professors was steady. The number of students increased by a factor of 3 or 4. Now they are at a rate of students per faculty, which is around 16 or 17, which is a high number, but a reasonable number. It's something that you can operate, and so much they can that those 3 universities are the main research universities in Brazil. They publish more papers, they grant more PhD degrees, they have more patents, more spin-offs, and everything. So this is one of the differences which was important in this idea that appeared in the state of São Paulo, the way of funding, which is actually an older idea, as I will show to you in a few moments. If you look at, for example, the number of PhDs granted every year by those universities, they compare very well with the best universities or the largest universities in terms of PhD degrees in the United States. The University of São Paulo graduates 2,200 PhDs every year. That's a number that not even in China you will find a university which graduates that number of PhDs. University of Campinas, which has faculty of 1,700, graduates almost 900 PhDs every year. They compare well to Berkeley, Austin, Madison, which are the universities in the United States that graduate the largest number of PhDs individually. Those universities generate companies and spin-offs. Like this is data for the University of Campinas, a collection of the spin-offs generated in the last 15 or 17 years, 206 companies. Some of those are better, some are smaller, some die, some are already dead. Anyway, in the state of São Paulo, as I mentioned to you, the R&D expenditures are at around 1.6% of the regional GDP, and that's shown in the red line. The green line shows the situation for Brazil, and the blue line shows the situation for Brazil, excluding São Paulo, because the contribution of São Paulo is about half of that of Brazil, so if you really want to compare, you have to exclude. The thing is that this 1.6 is not only because the state government spends more money in research. It is also because business spends much more money in research in São Paulo than they do in other parts of Brazil. In the state of São Paulo, 60% of the R&D expenditures are done by industry. In the rest of Brazil, it's like 30%. So there's a huge difference there. And another big difference is that the level of expenditures by the state is almost twice as large as the federal government, when in the rest of Brazil it's the other way around. The federal government pays for around two-thirds of the research expenditures, and the state governments pay for around one-third of the research expenditures. So those are two relevant differences. Just to mention something about the São Paulo Research Foundation, which is a public foundation created in 1962 to support research in the state of São Paulo. It's like your National Science Foundation, only it operates in the state because it's funded by the state taxpayer. And the way it's funded is that it's funded by the state of São Paulo with 1% of all state revenues. Actually, the constitution of the state, in this case, it's not a decree by the governor or executive order. It's the constitution. The constitution of the state of São Paulo has an article that says that 1% of all state revenues belong to this foundation, for the foundation to support research in the state of São Paulo. Actually, until 1988, it was half a percentage point, and then it was increased to 1 percentage point in 1988. The foundation received in 2012 21,600 research proposals. They all are peer-reviewed by reviewers in São Paulo, in Brazil, or in the world. Many times the researchers submit the proposals in English so that we can use reviewers anywhere. And the turnaround time that we have on average for all those 21,000 proposals last year was 65 days. This is good turnaround time for a funding agency which uses peer review and everything. Our budget for 2011 was around $600 million. We spent this money in fellowships because educating or training the next generation of scientists, as I mentioned to you, is very important in Brazil and in the state of São Paulo. We have, every month, we pay around 12,000 persons to do research. Most of them are students, about 10,000, and 2,000 are postdocs. We have fellowships for undergrads, for masters and for doctoral students. We have a system for, we also spend our money funding academic research, which is funded through proposals or projects which last for 2 years, 5 years, or 11 years. It depends on the type of the research. We also have a strong and growing program of university-industry joint R&D, in which FAPESP associates to a company and announces a call for proposals. The selected proposals, which are selected by FAPESP and by scientists from that company, they will be co-funded by FAPESP and by the company. Those are some of the companies that we have in our portfolio. For example, with Peugeot Citroën, we are now analyzing proposals to create what here would be an engineering research center, ERC, funding for up to 11 years with several continuation reviews, a center for automobile research on automobile engines using biofuels. So, university-industry joint R&D, and we also have a program for funding small business R&D. Companies with less than 250 employees can submit proposals. It's like your SBIR, two phases, and last year we approved two of those every week. The funding from FAPESP goes mostly to health sciences, 27%, biology, 17%. Then if you jump here to the side to agronomy and veterinary, which is 9%, you will see that more than half of our money goes into life sciences. And then there is engineering, the humanities are important there with 10% of our funding, and then several other fields. Actually, this figure does not really show a priority defined by the foundation. It is a result of selecting proposals and following what the reviewers say in each field. It also tells us that there are more scientists in the state of São Paulo who work on health sciences than the number of scientists who work in, say, biology. And then the other factor that enters in this result is the cost of doing research in that particular field. It's sometimes a field has a lot of people and the cost of doing research might be smaller. This research funded by FAPESP is published in several international journals. This is one illustration of covers of good scientific journals which highlighted research funded by FAPESP over the years. You have all fields. You have molecular biology, you have health sciences, materials, pharmaceutical, physics, nanotechnology, psychology, many things. And that is because FAPESP has an idea that, a tradition, that we want to support good research. Of course, there is good research that will make business more competitive. There is good research that will heal sick people. There is good research that makes poor people rich. That's, government likes those three types there. And it's okay, they have to like, it's a good thing. But also, we at FAPESP, we value research that makes mankind wiser. We want to see in each one of the preceding three types this characteristic. It has to be research which is in the forefront of research. It's not to redo things which have been done by others. Which means we value at the foundation research in philosophy, in archaeology, literature, the arts, as we value research in engineering, biochemistry, astrophysics, all fields. That's one thing that I should point out here. FAPESP is a research foundation, it's not a science foundation. So we are supposed to support good research in any field, right? We do, for example, support research together with Embraer, which is the Brazilian, the fourth largest aircraft manufacturer in the world. We worked together with them in computational fluid dynamics, which was used for them to design their new jet, which is flying all over the United States, Europe, Brazil, everywhere, and generated a lot of interesting scientific papers about aerodynamics, methods for calculations, and so on, and generated, perhaps most importantly, a number of PhD students and master students that learned about those techniques working in actual things that are now flying all over the world. But on the other hand, we also fund astrophysical research, this observatory which is in Chile. The whole dome of this telescope was built in a radius of 100 kilometers around the city of São Paulo. Then it was brought to Chile. And for example, what do? This paper that they published in Nature in 2006, they observed the explosion of a supernova that happened 13 billion years ago. Unlikely somebody will make a company out of that. But it answers questions which all of us ask. How did the universe begin? How much lithium, how much hydrogen, how much metals existed in the before the first billion years of the universe? You have to look at the light from those explosions to be able to tell that. So this is also an example of research that we support. We support research in biodiversity. We have a very strong program of biodiversity research. This is an example. Those guys, actually a collaboration, researchers from Canada and São Paulo, they studied this bird, the toucan. Toucan is a tropical bird which has a very large beak. The question there was, why is that nature built this bird which carries 30% of its weight in its beak? And they learned that the beak of the toucan is a very, very efficient heat exchanger. They used infrared imaging to learn that. And of course, learning that lets you learn things about evolutionary biology, lets you also learn how much can the toucan fly to look for food, and if you build a road at distance X, will the toucan be able to go across the road or not? So it has impacts in conservation, for example, which this program had. And here I bring two illustrations of a connection between research, which is very fundamental, and an application. The researchers from this program that we have, BIOTA, they generate information that the state of São Paulo uses to write legislation for environmental conservation. So this little piece of legislation here, which is written in Portuguese, in this paragraph which is highlighted, is saying, considering the results obtained by the team of researchers of FAPESP's BIOTA program, the governor decrees that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So it's a nice example of a connection between good research and public policy that becomes better because of research, right? We also support research in the humanities, in political science. This is a very nice study by Professor Argelina Figueiredo and Fernando Limongi from the University of São Paulo about Brazilian democracy. How does presidential power interplays with legislative organization and with party behavior in Brazil? And so they counted the votes in Congress and how the president influenced or not influenced that, and which were the underlying factors in this. And a last example, this program that we have in bioenergy research, one of the things that they study is, would it be possible to make sugarcane grow at a rate of 380 tons per hectare, when today sugarcane grows at a rate of 84 tons per hectare. Now, the question is that you have to perfect the plant so that it harvests more sun, more light from the sun, and uses more efficiently the water and the air. And this is very important for Brazil, because, as you know, Brazil uses a lot of energy made from sugarcane. Actually, this allows Brazil to be the industrialized country that has the cleanest energy matrix in the world. About half of the energy, half of all the energy used in Brazil comes from renewable sources. No other country gets close to that. If you look at the numbers in the bottom, the world average is 13%. The average for OECD countries is 7%. So Brazil is at 47%. And 47% because 18% of all the energy used in Brazil comes from sugarcane. For powering automobiles, Brazil uses every year more liters of ethanol than liters of gasoline to power the automobiles in the streets. So that leads me to the final section here about the impacts of research, which we like to think of those impacts as three impacts. There is intellectual impact, social impact, economic impact. And we find that it's always necessary to keep repeating that, because if you only say impact, people listen economic impact. Politicians listen economic impact. right? So you always have to say that there are three impacts. Research is done because you want to discover things that nobody discovered before, to make mankind wiser. Research is done also because you want to make the economy develop, and research is done because you want society to develop. So there are at least three impacts that have to be considered when you talk about research. And just to mention to you that FAPESP and the State of São Paulo universities, and also the federal universities in the State of São Paulo, are working to develop international connections. We have agreements for international collaboration with several organizations. That's a sample of those, funding agencies and universities. And in the United States, we have 7 universities with which we have agreements for exchange and sometimes for actually funding research. With the University of California, Davis, we have a call for proposals which is open with a deadline on May 15. The fields are humanities and social sciences, research that makes mankind wiser and that might help the government to be better at some point. That's the link for the call for proposals. We are really looking forward to this collaboration so that we can have a higher intensity of collaboration between researchers in the State of São Paulo and researchers at UC Davis. I will finish by mentioning to you that if you want to learn about research in the State of São Paulo and in Brazil, you can subscribe to this newsletter that FAPESP publishes in English every week. Actually, we publish that in Portuguese every day, and then by the end of the week, we select a number of items and make a translation, and so it will bring to your computer every week information about new research projects, new research opportunities, institutions, universities, research institutes, and so on, in the State of São Paulo in Brazil. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you. So we open the floor for questions.
Please, Professor.
A request, perhaps. You haven't said anything about, or not very much about access. Yes. Oh, okay. Brazil is has a lot of diversity, ethnic diversity, socioeconomic diversity, and so forth. And I know that there are many attempts to deal with this and increase access. And I think it would be nice if you could say a few things about successes in this area, if you are succeeding, or challenges. Okay. We have the same issues here, so it would be interesting to compare notes.
Yeah. Well, access to higher education in Brazil is kind of skewed towards richer people, as it tends to be everywhere around the world. And Brazil is now, and has been actually for the last, I would say, 20 years, working to reduce the barriers that keep poorer people away from higher education. Some of those initiatives were built in a more careful way. Other initiatives were built in a more populist way. For example, recently the federal government announced a law which forces all federal universities of Brazil to have quotas for black people, a certain percentage proportional to the percentage that exists in that region, or for poorer people, regardless of qualifications. Many universities are not very happy with that because they think that for a university to develop, you have to have well-qualified students. So the universities in the State of São Paulo built a proposal which is being discussed now, which establishes targets and establishes also that the universities have to change the way they select students, because I have to go back 3 or 4 steps here. The universities in Brazil, they do not go looking for students as you are used here in the States. Universities in Brazil sit and wait for the students to enroll in an exam. And they offer an exam once a year, and if a person gets 565, the person is in. If the person gets 564, the person is out. It's just a line there. There's no holistic way of looking at the candidates' qualifications and their experiences and so on. So the universities in the state of São Paulo are trying to build a system which looks into that, because we believe that it will be possible to increase a lot the participation of the poorer strata of the population by doing that, because actually the thing that a good university wants is not really a student that aces in a test which was offered in a certain day. A good university wants a student who has the strongest capacity to develop intellectually by staying there for 4 or 5 years or 6 years. So it's something much more difficult to measure than measuring the grades in a test. So that's what we are trying to build in São Paulo. So that's the landscape for access in Brazil.
I have been reading about all the wonderful fellowships that children are getting. I think they call them Bolsa Familia. Maybe it is too soon, but have those children already reached the college stage?
Not yet.
So the question is about sort of the politics behind getting these designated tax funds, and you know, I would guess that this was a business-led effort, but can you tell us more about how that came to be?
No, it was not, in both cases, the universities and the foundation, it was not really a business-led effort. It was an effort led by the academic community, which then was able to obtain support from business. In the first case was the foundation, which actually happened in 1947, after the Second World War, when it was easy to defend science for the government, right? Easier than it is now. A number of scientists in São Paulo came to the State Senate, which was drafting a new constitution in Brazil, because Brazil goes through something that you here in America never heard of, which is redemocratization. It's a process in which you lose democracy and then you regain democracy. Then you have to write a constitution. No, don't try. It's not a good thing. It's better to live without that. But anyway, it happened in Brazil a number of times. So there was one of the redemocratizations of Brazil. They were writing a constitution. A number of scientists came to the state senate and told them, well, look, scientists made the atom bomb. They built the radar. Maybe you should pay attention to science. And they said, well, yeah, maybe we should. And then they proposed this article in the Constitution, which targeted 0.5%, which then, in another redemocratization in 1988, was changed from 0.5 to 1%. And then, because we had the foundation, later in 1989, the government of the state decided to fix a percentage number for funding the universities. But the short answer to your question was, the idea came from the academic community.
Is impact a consideration in merit and promotion within the universities, or can you discuss how that idea gets translated into the institutions?
Yeah, it is. Impact is considered, or is being more considered now than it was in the past. For a long time in Brazil, most of the analysis, either in career progression or in selecting research proposal, was limited to the number of papers the person created. And in recent year, there has been a change, which is still in progression, to look at impact, any one of those three impacts. That's why we formulated this thing with the three impacts, because there is intellectual impact, which you can more or less assess through citations. Then there is economic impact. A person might have a patent that was licensed to a number of companies. And there is social impact. So it's something that is being progressively more considered now.
So It's fascinating to see some of the parallels between Sao Paulo and California. Might even be a great comparative article to write. One of the things that struck me, you presented the information not just on the vibrance of the public sector research, but also the heavy private investment in research at Sao Paulo. Here, there's some controversy about private funding of research and development in public institutions. Is that an issue? And how do you approach it?
Absolutely, it is an issue. Now, I should clarify that the 60% that I've shown there is the total expenditure by industry. Most of that is done in industry. They have their own research labs, their engineers, like it happens here. I think that in the United States, the percentage that industry uses to contract research in universities would be around 2% of the total amount of money they spend in research. In Sao Paulo, it's more or less like this, with one important difference. The research done, research and development done by industry in the state of Sao Paulo is much more of an incremental type than it is for radical innovation creation. Industry in Brazil, for many historical reasons, which would allow us to write several papers and conferences, doesn't look at the world. They look at the internal market, and so they want to adapt things to have a better share of the internal market of Brazil. Now things are starting to change a little bit, but very, very slowly. But anyway, it's there is a concern, and many times this concern turns into louder things in universities about private funding for research. Yeah.
First of all, thank you very much. When I was looking at slide 5, and I know that you were talking appropriately primarily about public research universities, struck me that there was a tremendous growth in the private sector in those other institutions, other higher education institutions.
Correct.
Can you give me a sense of those? Are they technical institutes, and who is going to those kinds of institutions, and why?
They are mostly, in a few cases, they are universities. In most cases, they are, how would I call that? It might be technical. It's an isolated school. It's a school of law, for example. Most of that growth is related to law and to some other fields in the humanities, because those are cheaper for the private sector to organize. They do not need a laboratory and so on. And that happened because there was, and there still is in Brazil, an effect which is, if people have a higher education diploma, they get better paid. Whatever they learned in higher education, maybe they didn't learn anything, but they have the certificate. And it's not that they learn law to practice law. They go to the private law school, but they become a secretary because they learn better how to write and read and organize things and so on. So it's an additional education. It would be most properly called post-secondary education. But in Brazil, it's called higher education.
And if I might follow up, here, as you probably know, I'm sure you know, we're talking a lot about online education. Is that becoming an important player in Brazil?
It is. There are a number of initiatives at the national level, also in the state of Sao Paulo. An important part of our plan for increasing access to the universities in Sao Paulo includes having part of some courses being offered as not completely distance education, but a mix of distance and presential education, kind of a MOOC, smaller than, not 1 million students, maybe 50,000.
Question. Thank you for the terrific presentation. I really appreciated those calling out of those three goals, the intellectual, economic, and social, both because it highlights all of them, as you say, doesn't default to one. So I have two questions about that. Well, one is, what kinds of conversations are happening about the integration of those different modes of impact and to the extent to which they're mutually supportive as opposed to being distinct? And then the second is, to what extent are they being used as metrics within the university itself to allocate resources and promotion and tenure and strategic kinds of decisions?
Well, as I said before, it is something that is in progression. The thing is that, for example, in a funding agency like where I work, you ask for colleagues to write reviews. Minimum effort tendency is for persons to count articles and say, well, this person published whatever number of articles, must be good. We are working with the reviewers to avoid this kind of assessment. We would like them to say, to tell us something about the impact of some of the articles. I don't know, in 2002, this person had a very good idea which appeared in the physical review letters, which was something like that. It is not very easy to get that from the reviewers, especially in Brazil, because they were used to a system which confounds, which believes in a strange type of objectivity, right? If you count the number of articles, it's objective. But it's not, really. You don't, the number doesn't tell you anything. But, you know, in Brazil, there is a love, a passion for this so-called objectivity. So it's an uphill battle to get the community to agree to do that and so on. And the same happens in the universities, in progression, in careers and so on. But I think we are moving forward, especially, I should say, in the three state universities in the state of São Paulo. There is, of course, one difficulty related to that, which is, in Brazil, we have several agencies that fund research. So if they talk different things, the community either doesn't understand or chooses the easier path. And this is what is happening now. Some of the federal agencies are talking about quantity, and we in São Paulo are talking about quality. And there is a dispute. Let's see what's going to happen in a few years.
I also appreciate the professor's focus on supporting research from all disciplines, and I was wondering what you think about the Science Without Borders focus on just the STEM fields.
Well, the Science Without Borders is a program by the national government of Brazil, which has many positive sides to it, but has also some negative sides, in my view. One of them is that I don't see why keep out the humanities and the social sciences in the program. It is as important to Brazil to have engineers who have had an experience abroad as it is important to have political scientists who had an experience abroad. So I think that is a mistake, but sometimes when you do things, you make mistakes, and you might be able to fix that in the future.
I feel very encouraged by your philosophy. But I also ask if you could define, if the definition of your tripartite, the tripartite definition of your of what you call impact, is your definition, or it's much broader. It's your philosophy, it belongs to your administration, and you see it that it's going to continue, at least at the level of APESP. Mm-hmm. because the political winds change this kind of philosophy. And here I'm asking you if you think that this is going to stay, or we're going to be moving perhaps toward a more utilitarian
place. My feeling is that the most probable chance is that it's going to stay, because we have, it's not something that I invented out of nothing. We formulated that after discussing and debating with hundreds of members of the academic community in the state of São Paulo, with whom we interact every week, every day, in selecting proposals in meetings like this and so on. So there is this idea of looking at research in this way was well received by the scientific community in the state of São Paulo. So I believe it's going to stick. Yes.
Thank you so much for your presentation. You've painted a very enviable picture of the city of São Paulo, and I'm wondering to what extent you see this as a model that other states or the federal government are considering following, especially from the funding. So, I actually have two questions, so that's one question. And then two, can you say a little something to us about tuition and the financial onus on students, particularly in terms of the state funded universities and federal funded universities? And the fact that there are not enough spaces for students in the federal universities, hence the rise of these private institutions.
Okay. Well, as for the first part of your question, which relates to initiatives in other regions of Brazil or by the national government, I wish I could give a more positive answer to that, but I can't. I can, in a certain sense. For example, all states in Brazil created a foundation like FAPESP in the last 30 or 40 years. The thing is that in most of them, I think with two exceptions, the governor considers the constitution as a suggestion, not as something that he has to follow. And the result is that they have those foundations, and the foundations do not have funds. They cannot operate. And that is compounded by the fact that the tradition in those regions of Brazil is to expect that the federal government will substitute for state expenditure and initiative. And the federal government responds to that. The federal government substitutes. They go there and they say, well, you know, you cannot have your foundation. We'll give you more money to compensate for that. And they turn to us in São Paulo and say, well, you have FAPESP. You don't need our money. So this creates a configuration which is not very, very good for future developments. There is also, in my view, my personal view, a tendency by the national government to be very populist in certain of their measurements. There is to do things which make unions happy and lots of many people happy, as opposed to doing things which sometimes will not make people happy, but which are necessary for academic development. For example, a few weeks ago, the federal government, following what I said about the universities not having autonomy, they published a law establishing what is the career in every federal universities in Brazil, and actually forbidding the universities to require that a person that will be hired has a PhD. That was, why did they do that? Because there was an agreement between the Ministry of Education and the unions in a strike that happened 1 or 2 years ago. That was part of the agreement. So that's clearly not good for academic development. That's not in the public interest, but it is a complicated situation, because while this happens, because of the more comfortable economic situation of Brazil, the federal government is spending more money with the universities, which would be a good thing. But if you spend more money with universities that cannot progress, maybe it's not such a good thing. So it is. There are many contradictions to that. But you should factor out that that is my view, right? It's other people might have different views on that. My view you normally is very much oriented towards academic merit in university. That's something I value a lot. The federal government values more equality and democracy, as they say in Brazil. So this is a difficulty which exists. There's a further complication, which is the fact that the federal government is more or less reaching their limit in expenditures. So they will have to control the federal expenditures at some point, and that might create complicated situations in some universities. Now, for the other part of your question, which was about what? Tuition. Yeah, tuition. Well, public universities in Brazil are free. Zero tuition. And I'm sorry? No. Every public, actually, it's written in the Brazilian Constitution that a public university has to offer education for free. Some universities that decided to charge for some special MBA courses and so on were sued by the Supreme Court of Brazil for violating the Constitution. So it is a situation which, on one hand, makes some sense in a country where people are not too rich for going to universities, but also it tends to create a system which is not really completely sustainable, because, for example, universities do not have enough incentives to look for students or to go and find them and find the best students and so on. But on the other hand, it's a very hot political issue in Brazil. It's one of those issues in which no politician will ever say to you that he might consider changing that. They would be dead. It's like here in America, you have this thing about the third rail, right? So it's the third rail of Brazilian politics.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.